but.
No, you took it. You have to hold it down. You have to hold it down.
Well, anyway, Sean Kelly, City of Valley Mayor.
Carol Benson, Mayor of Black Diamond. Our two of our council members, Erica Morgan and Brian Weber, will not be in attendance tonight.
Chuck Wagner, Mayor of Covington.
Margaret Carlin, Covington City Council.
Linda Johnson, Maple Valley City Council.
Fran Collins, Covington City Council.
Megan Terry, Maple Valley City Council.
Pat Pepper, Black Diamond City Council.
So I would accept a motion to accept the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I believe the agenda has been accepted. So I want to welcome you all. We had a little ceremony before the meeting. They were going to do it during the meeting, but they decided they had invited everybody at 6:30, so that we might as well go ahead and do it. A police officer had made an arrest of a drunk driver, and he had a heart attack. And so Covington, Maple Valley, and King County came together and rescued him and got him to the hospital. And he was here tonight as evidence that they actually saved his life. So anyway, it was kind of fun. And I just wanted to welcome everybody, our 10th year, and I think we're still going strong. We all seem to still get along with each other and be able to work with each other with our departments and equipment and public works. And so I think it's been a really good relationship. And so I just welcome you all tonight. We have some people in the audience, and which is good. So our first speaker is going to be Reagan Dunn, and he's just going to tell us what's going on with King County.
Well, thank you very much, Mayor, and council members. I'm great. Glad to see you guys are doing your joint planning yet again every year. I think it's smart. You know, you're basically a sea of three cities, over 50,000 people, surrounded by unincorporated King County, with the exception of the border between Covington and 10th. You have unique challenges. I want to congratulate Deputy Michael for earning the Blue Star Award for his courageous police work while suffering serious injuries, and to all the folks that serve in the line of duty here. Just a brief update. I know you guys got a lot of ground to cover, so I'm going to be quick. We passed our biennial budget out last fall, $11.4 billion, $1.6 billion in the general fund, which supports a lot of the services you're familiar with, police, sheriff, prosecution, court. Through this budget process, I was able to secure funding for Kent, Tahoma, and Neocloth School Foundation and the Historical Society throughout the district as well. So proud of that. The most important thing that we were able to do was to fully fund the Sheriff's Department, add back some officers, and most importantly, the Marine Unit and the Helicopter Unit were safe. And that matters. That matters a lot. We got hikers stranded up in the mountains every summer, and if you don't have that ability to save lives, and people buy rivers every year, or almost every year, and it's a serious issue as well. But that's really important that we funded that, and we will continue to make sure we're actually working on a regional plan to make sure that we continue to pay those moving forward. On law enforcement, we opened this year a sheriff's memorial down at the courthouse. 16 deputies died in the line of duty. It's right next to where the sheriff of our front office is on the first floor of the courthouse. I encourage you to go and take a look at it and get proud of what we've done there. Let me shift gears. I shared the King County Flood Control District, separate unit of government. It helps the RIAs. It helves the, we put $500 million in infrastructure improvements, levees, other flood reduction structures in flood-prone areas in King County, which we have many. One important point, if you remember last year, and it happened repeatedly, Highway 169 was flooded when the Cedar River gets high, and it's right there where Cedar Grove comes into the Maple Valley Highway. There's that low spot there. So we put together a study, a feasibility study on how we're going to fix that. As you know, I mean, there's really a couple of ways to get out to these communities. You take 516, 10 Kang, you take 169, and when those roads closed for whatever reason is a real problem. Not just for the three cities represented here today, but the 70,000 unincorporated area residents that I represent, as well as the city of Edenbrock. So we'll be working on that. And one of the things we're thinking about doing is actually just raising the highway there. If there's a dip, you'll know where it is, and you bring it up so it's no longer floodworthy. We're also working on levee improvements there. And it's important because there's a very important regional fiber optic line that's right next to the river there, which we need to protect as well. We have a sub-regional opportunity fund every year. Money goes to your city for specific projects. The district has allocated just under $80,000 for Black Diamond, $225,000 for Covington, and $314,000 for the city of Maple Valley since the district was created. And that's based on population, essentially based on population. A second part of what we do in the flood district is a grant program based on merit. It's about $2.66 million annually. We started this just a couple, 3 years ago, and it's one of the things that aren't in our six-year capital improvement program, the major thing. And so it really is designed to help reduce localized flooding. It can be nonprofit organizations, homeowners associations, cities, of course, can apply. A lot of different groups that historically haven't been included. So Maple Valley received a $295,000 grant for the Wood Rose project. And this is going to replace culverts under the road with a large box culvert. I know Marlo likes
fish.
Alleviate flooding on the road and adjacent residential properties. Roads in the area currently are sometimes closed due to flooding, and it flooded the yards and driveways as well. So it has construction hasn't started, but it's expected to be completed in 2018. Covington's received $200,000 in grants for Southeast 256th Street. That's a little Deuce Creek culvert of replacement project. There are a couple of deteriorating culverts there that are in danger of collapse. And severe flooding would flood in that situation a lot of residential properties along. So the grant is paying for design only. It's expected to be completed at the end of 2018. The project is about 2.5 miles west of Maple Valley. And the Seuss Creek Watershed, we remember. Talking about parks very briefly, the director of King County Parks Department, Kevin Brown, is here. And say hi, Kevin. If I get this wrong, feel free to jump in. Just a couple of different things. We're working on a regional trail system that connects Covington to Maple Valley and Black Diamond. The Green the Cedar River Trail North segment is in the design phase currently. I know the parks have held several community outreach meetings on this. We're going to work with the three cities during the feasibility study, so you all have an input on it as well. I've heard a lot of concerns from community members about this trail. We'll continue to monitor this issue going forward. Later this evening, King County Park is going to give you an overview of the project so we get more specific on it. In this year's county budget, I was able to procure funding for park priorities in each of your cities. Geiger Creek Trail for the city of Black Diamond, Covington Community Park, and Summit Park for the city of Maple Valley. Also was able to insert money for all three of the city's parks and recreation departments, as well as funds for a variety of local youth sporting organizations, such as the Canton Soccer Association, Maple Valley Ponies Baseball, and Maple Valley Soccer. I've also requested in the budget for grant money for an additional 5 youth sport organizations in the 3 of your cities. So just, you know, if there's a worthy organization, especially one that helps kids or young people or folks with disadvantages, please bring it to my attention and I can help direct some of the resources from the county in that general direction. Transit, the service improvements that occurred recently, Route 143 from Black Diamond to Seattle in September 2015, 2 new trips were added, 1 in the morning and 1 in the evening. It was designed to reduce overcrowding on the route. Existing trips were adjusted to provide improved frequency, with trips operating about every 20 minutes. That was a change. The Route 907, Black Diamond route in March 2017, in conjunction with the Southeast King County Alternative Service Project, Route 907, was revised to begin and end in Black Diamond instead of Edenbrock, and frequency was improved from every 90 to every 60. So that's just an update on transit. Overall, the county is doing pretty well, a lot better than we were in 2009, 2010 when the recession was quite distinct.
But we still have lots of challenges, and budget challenges are one of them. We've had some significant challenges with wastewater treatment in prison and the sewage going into Puget Sound. It's now been repaired and rebuilt, and that was a very serious issue as well. But the county's doing pretty well. Best I've seen it in a long time. And for me, it's just very important to make sure that we are providing regional services that help your city do what you want to do. My job is to, you as city leaders decide what you want to do in your city. And my job is to help empower you to the extent I can to help do our part in particular. Things like making sure 516 is improved, the Maple Valley Highway is expanded, and we did get that highway done, set as a highway statewide significance several years ago, which means funding will go there. And with the change in the legislature, I think you're going to see more funding directly from the state to improve that and widen, particularly as it comes into Maple Valley. So that's a short and long-term goal. And I'm happy to take questions, or perhaps you can email me if you want to. I don't want to get out there if you've got a lot of interest to cover, but I'm happy to take them if you want.
Is there anybody that has any questions?
Great. Well, one thing I forgot, Mr. Mayor Benson. Over there, standing at the wall, is my fiance, Ashley Wilson. We have Dave. He said yes. It was worked out. So, thank you for your time. It's a privilege to serve all of you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So, I think I'm up.
Is this turned on?
Yes.
So, each one of the cities is going to give a presentation on what's going on in our city. So, we finally did pass the budget this year. We had a lot of controversy over it, but we finally did pass the budget till the end of the year, which is a good thing. And we wanted to honor our city clerk, Brenda Martinez. She's been really busy this year, and she actually got her master clerk certification this year, so we're very proud of her for doing that. Okay. So we have multiple construction projects this year. We have construction of the Black Diamond Elementary School, the water line installation on Roberts Drive, commercial and home construction in the villages, 10 trails, and the civic park in the villages, which is also 10 trails. The Black Diamond Elementary School is on track for completion. The Enumclaw School District expects it to open in the fall of 2017 for the beginning of the school year. Students are attending classes in Enumclaw right now in a school that was refurbished for them to go to school there. So, this is kind of what it looks like right now, and this is what the school is supposed to look like when it's finished, and it'll be like a half again the number of population of what the school was before. So we'll be able to have some growth in this elementary school. And this is the water line on Roberts Drive, and they finished the water line construction over the weekend, and this was them installing, so we have a 750 and an 850 water line, and then we're putting some other conduit over the bridge that will allow us to add utilities at some future date if we get some new utilities. So this was the cement that they put over to protect the pipes, and then this was recently paved. I think it was paved on Monday, so this has all been paved now. So it's looking really good. And then this is the villages, and they're going to have start homes this year with some commercial development by the end of 2017. They changed the name of the villages to 10 trails, but our agreement still says the villages, so we have to call it the villages. They've installed a lot of infrastructure and utilities for section preliminary plat 1A, which is the first one that they're going to come up with the final plat. The construction of the stormwater pond is completed, and it will service preliminary plat 1A. We just started the construction of the roundabout over the weekend, and the roundabout will be for Lake Sawyer, Road with access at Lake Story Road and Roberts Drive with access to the development. And we have a bypass road now that comes off of Lake Sawyer Road that goes down around the corner. And if you want to go down Roberts Drive, there's a little detour to go around so that they can work on the roundabout. So we're really busy, a lot of construction going on. And this is the civic park that 10 Trails is going to build. And there'll be a stage for small concerts, event and play area, picnic pavilion, a bocce court, and a zip line. And Tammy could tell you about a zip line in one of their other developments, but it's kind of cute. It's not very big. It's not like two or three. It's just one little zip line. But it'll be a great addition to the community, and they're going to be building this right away. So that'll be open to the public. It's not a private park. It's going to be a public park. Whoa. So we have our own police department, and we contract with Mountain View Fire and Rescue. In 2016, Black Diamond was ranked 9th for the safest cities in Washington. We just got our ranking back yesterday for 2017, and it's been ranked 15, but that's still way up there on top compared to Maple Valley and Covington. And then the Mountain View Fire and Rescue provides emergency service and medical care to victims of accidental and emergency medical conditions. And in our community, we have a lot of community events. We have Welsh Day. We have the Memorial Day service at the Black Diamond Cemetery. We have Black Diamond Miners Day, Labor Day, and Hometown Christmas. And this year, this is the dates of all of those events. And we get a pretty good turnout. Actually, if you can see the Memorial Day service, there's my husband and I standing at the end of the row. But these are all people that are active in the community that come to the Memorial Day service. And they do salutes with the guns. I don't remember what they're called. But it's a really nice event. And we just have a really historical cemetery. And we have other community services. We have the community center, and we have the Black Diamond Gym, and the Black Diamond Museum. And we also have had other venues. We've had Tough Mudder for the fifth year, I believe, this year. And we've had triathlons, fun runs, and walks. So we have a lot of community events that people come out here because it's fun. And this picture is one of the events at Tough Mudder, people jumping into muddy water and then having to swim out and go running down the trails after that. And we have our own gym. In 1992, Mayor Botts and his wife, Dorothy, spearheaded moving the gym to its current location on city site. And then when I first got on council, I had a quit claim deed because they had deeded it to the community center, but it was on our property and it didn't make sense that they were running it. So we took the gym back, and now we have jazzercise, volleyball, basketball, birthday parties. So you can rent the gym for anything that you want to, and it's basically $30 an hour. And then this Black Diamond fire truck, in 2012, some local citizens salvaged it from a wrecking yard and restored it to the state that it's in now. And there were a lot of people that were involved in the restoration, including Joe Androsco and Gomer Evans. And it was just a great thing to do. And we finally talked to the fire department and moving some of their equipment out of the old 99 station so we could store it in there, and then he would have access for community events to be able to bring it out for the public. And anyway, we have a lot going on in the city. We're really busy, and we've got lots of permits coming in that outside of the development. So,
I have a question, Madam Mayor. Your fire truck, can we borrow it for Maple Valley Days for the parade? So we
yes,
can all sit on it?
Yes, it's in the parade before. It's going to be in the parade.
Okay.
Yes, it's going to be in the parade.
This one is? Okay.
Yes.
Just want to make sure that, will it go down the road?
Yes.
Because ours has to be towed.
Our stage is replaced in engine and all the parts.
No.
Oh, did you hear that? We're a stage.
I'm pulling audio.
Are you still talking about that down there?
Yeah.
We need your commander between us. Come on over here.
I'm enjoying this.
Yeah. Would you like me to begin? Are we ready to go? Okay. Well, I will take a couple minutes, give a very brief City of Covington. You're getting a lot of feedback there. Don, not our IT guy, but our IT guy tonight is making it happen, so thanks, Don. So this is a quick update of what's happened since the last time these three cities got together and met. A couple of things that I wanted to go over that I thought were really important for us is citizen engagement, the things that the City of Covington is really reaching out to do. The City Council appointed 15 community members to what we call the PREPAC, the Parks and Recreation Priorities Advisory Committee. They were tasked with the responsibility to really kind of research our community. What do we need in the areas of athletics, recreation, parks, and trails? And how do we accomplish those things? They put together a great report, spent a lot of time, worked very hard, and also included the arts, submitted their report to the City Council, and the City Council immediately started moving on it, including allocating $1 per capita towards public art projects in our current year budget. So that was a great thing that Covington did since our last meeting. We have some great police volunteers, great volunteers throughout the community as a whole. But our police volunteers do a lot. They do house checks. They run the radar trailer throughout different areas in the community. They do come down to our business district and run patrols around there, giving some visibility for our police department. We're grateful for the work that they do. We did a citizen survey. We received 488 of them back. They were both phone and online. Our top priorities, you can see there, were police, emergency preparedness, streets, and communication, and how we communicate with our community. Social media is also something that we've worked hard in Covington to be very active on, and it's paid good dividends. We have about just over 3,500 Facebook likes and followers on Twitter, which is about 19% per capita, which is a great following, a great resource for us to be able to communicate. In planning and development, it's been a very busy year since we last met. We initially received, with our comprehensive plan, a conditional certification from PSRC. We spent an inordinate amount of time working on that and working with PSRC, and were able to just very recently receive full certification of our comprehensive plan. And we're also reclassified from a small city to a larger city, which is a good thing and something that we had met the threshold for some time now. So we're glad that those things happened. Our Hawk property development, which is something I think we're probably all aware of and have heard about, something we're excited about. We completed an 80-acre annexation into that, and then just last month, the City Council approved the development agreement that our Community Development Department's been working on for over a year with the developer. And this was a process that I think was the epitome of how local government and the community and the private sector should work together. The community members, right, and you can see the laser there, right, in this area formed a group of a neighborhood committee that wanted to say in this development. They were active. They came to our council meetings. They came to our open houses. The developer sat down with them, sat down with the City Council, and they helped effectuate change in the development agreement and in the development. It was a really great process, and that is moving along now. Last year, we conducted a higher education needs assessment in Covington. A City Council goal has been to bring higher education into the community. That needs assessment was done from representatives from all colleges and universities throughout the state, and other organizations, and an agency out of Colorado actually conducted the assessment and facilitated it. In the end, what was determined is that those people that are 18, graduating high school and going to college in our area of Southeast King County, they're actually going to college at higher rates than the rest of the state. But we have a disproportionate amount of people in Southeast King County that have some college and no degree. And so that's really our target audience. So we've been working with Green River College. We have an ask in with the legislature this year. It's so far funded by both the House and the Senate, but as everybody knows, we're in our second special session. We'll see what happens with that. But that would provide funding to Green River College to provide programming at Kentwood High School. If that's funded, that will begin this fall. Those, I gotta go back to that because that's a funny picture. Those are our legislators with graduation caps that we gave them for helping us with that funding. Transportation is a major issue we're all concerned about, all dealing with, and so are we here in Covington. The 204th connector project, that will connect Kent Kangley right here. It'll come up here, this blue line, and connect to Highway 18 at 256. It will go through the Hawk property development that I previously mentioned. We received funding for this project in the 2015 transportation package, but a portion of it was allocated to come this biennium, but then not, but then the rest of it later. So it would have been several years before we could really kind of move some dirt and get this project going. So we drafted some proviso language this year, been working with our legislators and others so that the developer can front the money for this project, and then when the state allocation becomes available, they can be reimbursed for those funds. So far, and that's a done deal now. That was passed already in the transportation budget, and so this is a public works project, but we're doing it hand in hand with the developer, and we're working on that as we speak. SR 516 from Jenkins Creek to 185th, we are working on right-of-way acquisition right now. We held an open house Monday, just a couple days ago, with I believe every property owner except one that will be affected by this was in attendance. They had a lot of questions. The main concern is how do we get annexed into the city? We said that's outside of this meeting, but that's something we're moving on, and we'll be able to further widen the road as we head east towards Maple Valley. A couple of public works projects. Council Member Dunn mentioned this project. We had some failing culverts. We made a temporary fix there for now, so the road didn't completely cave in. But as he mentioned, we need to put a bridge or a box culvert in there. That's a multi-million-dollar project that we couldn't do on a temporary basis. So we're working and planning on that. We did receive some funds from the county for design of that project. Some safety improvement projects that we did. We improved 9 intersections. We also implemented a pedestrian crosswalk flag program at the Foss Roundabout, which is a very busy pedestrian roundabout with Kentwood High School right there and the students walking through that. We think the flags are catching on and people are actually using them, so that's a good thing for us and for them. Several drainage projects. We completed our Timberlane drainage phase, rehabilitation of 2 retention facilities, completed over 6,600 feet of stormwater ditch restoration, and over 8,000 of shoulder maintenance to help drainage in the city. In parks and recreation, this has been something that the city just took over a couple years ago. We're in our third year now. It's been very successful in the planning element of this. We have our Covington Community Park. Phase 1 is complete. We've been working on Phase 2. That's in design right now. We're moving ahead with that. Construction will begin this year. It will include additional parking. If you've been out there and used that park, you know parking's an issue. So we'll include that, a large grass area, a playground, an outdoor amphitheater will be a great addition to the community. We're also working on SoCo Park or South Covington Park. That is a proposed park that's made up of 3 existing parcels along Wax Road just across the street from the current Covington Elementary School. We were able to recently close on one of those parcels, the largest of the 3 parcels that we need, all with grant funds, and so we're moving ahead with that. With recreation, we had a part-time rec aide that kind of ran our recreation, but we made her full-time, and it's had wonderful dividends for the city. Last year, we had 66 classes, a 37% increase in revenues, 16% increase in participation. We established our first-ever day camp. It was a week-long camp for junior high, middle school age students, and every day they went out and did a really great kind of adventurous activity. They did service projects and had a wonderful time. It wore out our staff that went along with them every day. They had a great time and a lot of excitement for that this year as well. And then we also funded a scholarship program for recreation through the Covington Rotary Club. In athletics, we had over 2,200 participants and 284 days of programming, which was just exceptional, and our athletics department did an amazing job there. In arts, we got our first public art piece right here, the Covington Seahorse. It's sitting outside of the Aquatic Center. We had that on lease for a couple of years, and we just purchased that a few months ago. And we also commissioned this mural right here on our skate park. And this picture doesn't do it justice, but it's really, really beautiful. It tells a very cool story about the Pacific Northwest. It was a local artist who now lives in Hawaii, but came back and worked with the skaters, right? These kids in the community that came out, and he helped, you know, teach them how to stay in the lines on painting this thing. And our arts commission was super involved. It's a really beautiful, great mural that really enhanced that skate park. And then again, as I mentioned previously, the council funded $1 per resident for public arts. Our aquatic center is amazing. Over 128,000 visitors last year. If there's one thing we do that serves a lot of people, it's the aquatic center. We also built on, you'll notice, a room that doesn't look like it quite fits, right? Added a new room onto the side of that aquatic center. It's for parties. We had parties in kind of a back closet back there, but now we've got this great rental room. And the building's actually being painted this week to match the new addition, so it'll look nice and be aesthetically pleasing. And there's a lot of great special events that happen in that center, so we have a great time out there. Here's some of our community-wide special events, a few of which are last year was either the first or second year in which we had these. Of course, our Covington Days Festival has been going on for a while. Summer concerts in the park. We have close to 300 people on average turn out to these events, the concerts in the park. Our Kids Fest. We had our first outdoor family concert, which was a lot of fun. We had our second annual Sausage and Cider Fest with nearly 600 people attending that. It was a great success and a lot of fun. Outdoor family movie night, and of course our annual tree lighting event. We, about a year and a half ago, entered into a sister city agreement with Tatsuno, Japan. And last year we hosted our first cultural exchange with them. They sent over 3 chaperones and 10 students, 14 and 15 year olds. And we had an amazing time with them. Several families around the area hosted them, and we had a great time. They loved, they wanted big hamburgers, and so we did that, did some great hiking. Council member Harto came and spoke to them all, and it was just a really great thing. We also started, in fall of last year, a pen pal program with Covington Elementary School and Tatsuno Elementary School. And the teachers involved with it just rave about it. They love it. It's a great thing for their students. They've written each other numerous times and are having a lot of fun with that. In our community, some of the things I think we're most proud about, one is our Badges and Barbells program that Chief McCurdy, our police chief, has done an amazing job with at Cedar Heights Middle School. He goes over there, gets police officers, firefighters, and they work out with the kids, teach them how to lift properly, but that's not really the point. The point is to gain relationships with these youth at a young age, and they're doing that, and it's a wonderful thing that our officers are doing. Another thing that we did, we picked Ellie and Spencer for our 2016 Chiefs for a Day. They got, like, legit police uniforms. The place that makes our real one made these for them. They both have terminal illnesses. and aren't able to do as much as they'd like to do. And this was a wonderful thing. It lasted all throughout the year. They rode in the Covington Days Parade. They came to a city council meeting. The city council honored them. Several of us went to their backyard and constructed a playground set that was donated. And just a very wonderful program. Super cute and grateful children. Our Play and Plug program, these are two of my boys as we are going around doing this program. What it is we go around to the businesses. It's a business, school, community partnership program to keep our kids active during the summer. So we went around to our businesses working through the chamber, and a business could purchase a what's called a brag badge, and each badge had an associated activity with it, whether it was hiking or basketball or drawing or baking cookies, making your bed, whatever it was. And so when the child who receives a lanyard at the end of school does that activity, they then go to that business and pick up their lanyard. So it increases foot traffic into our businesses. Our businesses tell us they had about 150 kids come through their door last year, which is our first year, and we're doing it again this year, and has been a fun program to do. And then, of course, as Maple Valley, we're kind of twins. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, and we're very excited about that. We've got our new 20th anniversary logo, and we're planning our big birthday anniversary party in August. And that is Covington's update. Any questions?
Do you have a date yet for your anniversary?
We're working on that. We talked about the date the other day. I think, Carla, we were thinking about maybe the 26th. The 26th of August. The actual day is the 31st, which is a Thursday, and there's several things going on, so I think that would be the best day for it, but yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
Must be time for Maple Valley.
Well, I'll start out and just say yes, I did get into an accident last night, and thank you, Reagan Dunn, for keeping the helicopter unit, while I didn't need to use it, falling down on Tiger Mountain 2.5 miles from the car, I realized how important that might be for somebody. So Maple Valley, yes, just like Covington, we are celebrating our 20th birthday this year, which is really exciting. 20 years of progress. We have some pens and a new logo, and we had a lot of fun working with the community. We did do a Colorful Choices event this year through AWC. All three cities had an opportunity to participate where you ate as many vegetables and fruit as you could and logged that. So we had a friendly competition, and the winner was Covington, so congratulations, even though.
Let me add, though, Maple Valley gave us a real run for our money, so that was neck and neck.
We did try a few shenanigans too.
So Laura sent us some donuts, so of course I'm going to eat them.
So I want to say though, we talked to our group, we were kind of hanging our heads that we lost, but we did decide that we are making a donation to Maple Valley Food Bank from the employees who participated in honor of Covington, so. I do say it was a win for everybody. We had one of our employees who was doing some blood work for a medical issue, and after the Colorful Choices went back, and all her blood work had improved. So even though we lost, I think we won. Our Maple Valley Council is pictures up there. We've all introduced ourselves already. Again, we're celebrating. The banner on the side is what we have around town. We're having a great big party. We hope that you guys can all come on August 28th at 5:30. It's our annual town hall meeting date, but we've really expanded it to our birthday celebration, volunteer appreciation. We're going to have events for the kids. We're going to have, we actually are trying to get the Oscar Mayer Wiener truck. We're going to have music, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So we hope that you can come out and join us. We spent a lot of time over the last year really working on our community partnerships, the council and staff alike. We're really proud of the partnerships we have around town, especially with some of our bigger groups like the school district, Maple Valley Fire and Rescue, the Black Diamond, or Maple Valley Black Diamond Chamber of Commerce, Rotary. It's just been our special purpose districts. We really appreciate all the partnerships. One of the biggest ones was Tahoma School District is building their brand new high school. We are really excited to move that into the city limits, and it will be opening this fall, and it was a lot of work between city staff and elected officials to help get that done on time. And then another partnership we're doing is we're hiring a new school resource officer to help out at the school, and the school district and the city have partnered on that, and his name is Officer Carl Bonnell. Legislative priorities for the Maple Valley Council, transportation. we've heard already a little bit about it, but 169 in and out of the city. You'll hear a little bit more later from Councilmember Burberry. We supported the 1890 interchange improvements and state highway maintenance, as well as the other priorities that have been identified by AWC and Sound Cities Association. Spent a lot of time down in Olympia working on those and trying to bring transportation awareness to Southeast King County. Parks and Rec, or Parks Bond, we ran a Parks Bond earlier this year. It did not pass. So there's been a lot of question in our community and a lot of conversation about what's next. Our Parks Commission and Council are working hard to set a new direction to reprioritize. We've already had one joint meeting. Our Parks Commission has really been working hard on coming up with ideas and looking at ways to phase things, and we're planning to hold another meeting, joint meeting between the two groups, and we look forward to see what comes out of that. We're also talking about what to do with our golf course in town, as well as our beach house at Lake Wilderness Park. We've had some other fun projects in town. We have a new Gaffney's Grove disc golf course right near the Lake Wilderness Park. The ribbon cutting will be during Maple Valley Days on June 10th. And so if you are a golf or disc golf enthusiast, you should come out and check it out. It's fabulous. It's been put together mostly by volunteers and a grant from King County. Our youth sports program, the numbers just continued to expand and the need grow every year. We had 650 youth basketball players, 375 T-ball players, 400 Pee-wee soccer players. So our Parks and Rec staff do a great job. We also do a day camp every year called Camp Wild, and this year the waiting list was as long as the kids participating, and it sold out in 24 hours. We have our award-winning Lake Wilderness Lodge, where we have been working to take that around to different wedding shows. And we bought new furniture for it this year, and it really is a wonderful place for weddings and other venues, other events. And we, too, have a number of community special events, just like you heard from Black Diamond and Covington. One of our big partner events is coming up in just a couple weeks, our Maple Valley Days. But then as that ends, we have a number that are put on by our Parks and Recreation Department, such as Movie Under the Stars, our 4th of July. We have Music in the Parks, a lot of great, highly attended. A big focus for Maple Valley this year is economic development. We hired a new economic development manager, Tim Morgan, and he's really helping, get engaged with the communities and some of our property owners. We have 54 acres owned by the city. It's been named the Legacy Site. It's completely undeveloped. We also have their Summit property, 122 acres owned by King County next to the high school that's completely undeveloped. And then Hayes Pit, which is privately owned, but about 40 acres. So we're really focused on that, bringing in jobs, bringing in a diversity in our tax base. So we're really excited. We're also working with our local businesses on retention and expansion to make sure we're supporting them as well. I mentioned the Legacy Site for property. Here's a picture of it. It's beautiful. There's some informal trails through there that people have been using. It was acquired back in 2001. There's 16 members of our community that's been meeting to say, what do we want that to look like in the future? We've also are bringing in Urban Land Institute. They're actually going to be here just in a couple weeks to to help give us some ideas on what that should look like. And we're working closely with University of Washington students, and they're also helping provide some ideas. And we're working with their urban planning department as well as their forestry group. Single-family projects, people continue to want to live down in Southeast King County. We actually had more single-family home applications applied for in March than we had all of 2016. And there are over 500 new single-family lots in several different plats throughout the city that are under review. So we're continuing to grow. We'll be bringing those in. Transportation will continue to be super important. We do have a couple of commercial projects coming on board, mixed use in the Four Corners area with a combined 344 units and 28 buildings of multifamily, as well as a combined 40,000 square feet of commercial space. And we're also excited because we have a developer that has proposed a senior living facility, which we think is a need in Southeast King County. And it'll have 170 units, four stories, and a number of amenities to help at different stages of the senior aging. Public works projects in the queue, Whitty Road, Phase 4, Councilmember Dunn talked about the flooding portion. We are replacing a culvert as part of that project with the help of King County's flood program. The big one I wanted to talk about is State Route 516 and 218, affectionately known as the left turn pocket into Cherokee Bay. So I know there's been a lot of, everyone's been pretty excited to get that done. And that's all I had for this evening. So if you have any questions.
Thank you, Laura. Yeah, okay. So, we now are going to have somebody talk to us about some of the homeless issues in South End King County, Richard Hart.
Thank you, Mayor Benson, Mayor Kelly, and Mayor Wagner, and council members. Regan asked me to talk a little bit tonight about homelessness, which recently came up as an important issue in Covington, and I'll get to that in a little bit. I thought I'd put together some general statistics for you about facts about homelessness nationwide, statewide in Washington, King County, and then some of the approaches that the cities in Washington have used to address homelessness, both short and long term, some of the causes of homelessness, and then finish up with a specific issue at a request that we had several months ago about a potential homelessness facility in Covington. Specifically across the state, cities are grappling with the issue of homelessness. And it's not just an issue in large urban areas. It's also an issue in rural areas, small towns as well, and in the suburban population. Nationally, homelessness is slightly decreasing over the last 10 years across our country. However, there are certain states within the U.S. where homelessness has actually increased. States like Washington, Idaho, Nevada, Michigan, Massachusetts, and New York. I underline Nevada because it was a state with actually the largest increase in homelessness recently. Interesting fact. There are certain states that have actually had decreases in homelessness. California, Florida, Texas, North Dakota, and Illinois. I underline North Dakota because it was the state with the least increase. Interesting. You can draw your own conclusions of what's going on in North Dakota as far as employment to maybe deal with that issue, and then what's going on in Nevada. Actually, homelessness in Washington has actually been increasing over the last 4 years. Some of the causes of homelessness, I think we all have our own perceptions. I took some data off the King County website and the state website. There's a lot of factors that actually affect homelessness. Most often those factors are dependent upon geography and geographic location. And that means geographic location within the country or a specific geographic location within a state, whether it's urban, rural, or suburban. Housing affordability seems to be the greatest cause of homelessness. People's inability to actually afford a housing unit for whatever reason. Other causes include loss of employment, poverty, substance abuse, health issues, changes in family status, and believe it or not, even personal choice. There are those people, when you do interviews of homelessness, that say, I choose this method of living for whatever reason. Some additional homelessness facts. Nationally, 25% of homelessness suffer from mental illness. Nationally, 50% of homeless people actually suffer from substance abuse. And in some of the demographics within King County, 52% are white, 48% are of color. In King County, 67% are male, 33% are female. And looking at it by sort of the 10-year cohorts, in King County, 30% are over 50, 24% are between 40 and 50, 19% are between 30 and 40, 8% between 25 and 30, 13% between 18 and 20, and 6% are actually under 18. Some of the methods that are used for addressing homelessness in cities, probably the most common approach in long term is providing more affordable housing. As we talked about it, housing affordability, the largest cause of homelessness. Some of the most common approaches short term are to provide some form of temporary shelters or temporary encampments. Another approach short term are what we call these homeless encampments. Sometimes you know them by the term tent cities. They're often associated with religious institutions. Some specific examples over the last 10 to 15 years that I've worked with both here in Covington and my previous job at Mercer Island were with the cities of Seattle, Bellevue, and Kirkland, which they had their religious organizations host those tent cities or homeless encampments. And then most recently, there have been some efforts by several cities to actually provide homeless encampments by sleeping in automobiles. Some of those currently actually exist in Kent and in Kirkland and in Seattle. Specifically, when you talk about state requirements, there's an RCW 3121915 that limits local actions to restrict such of these homeless encampments when they're related to religious institutions. Cities cannot deny such encampments through a particular ordinance or regulation. They can only impose conditions that relate to public health and safety, and the conditions can't require insurance or indemnification against liability, and the cities can't actually impose fees beyond the actual cost to review and approve those homeless encampments that are associated with religious institutions. Also recently, as you saw in King County, that 6% figure of children in homelessness. Sometimes the circumstances surrounding homelessness can place those children in danger and can result in child protective services stepping in and their involvement. And that relates when someone finds certain conditions exist. And it might be the parents providing inadequate food, shelter, clothing, or supervision. It might be actual actions or omissions that result in injury or even create a risk of injury to both the physical, emotional, and cognitive development of the child. Cumulative effects of conduct, behavior, or inaction by the parent or guardian in providing the physical, emotional, and development needs of the child, and chronic failure on the part of the parent or guardian to perform certain basic parental functions. Now, how have cities across King County actually approached these temporary encampments at church sites? A lot of communities will have specific regulations on these temporary uses and encampments. Some cities provide for 60, 90, or 120-day temporary permits. Certain things you are actually allowed to do is require adequate restroom and periodic cleanup of trash. You can require background checks and allow city inspections. You can actually require site-obscuring fences and reasonable setbacks from adjacent residential neighborhoods. And you can, if you so choose, prohibit drugs or children or pets. You don't have to do that, but you can. Specifically in Covington, about 3 or 4 months ago, we were approached by one of our religious organizations, St. John the Baptist Church. They inquired about actually starting a homeless encampment on their particular site for sleeping in automobiles, and they asked us, what are your regulations? What kinds of permit processes would you have to go through? And they were doing that and trying to prepare for potentially submitting an application to us. They also were meeting with the surrounding homeowners associations to decide how they wanted to proceed. In Covington, we have specific regulations that would require a temporary use permit application and a minimal fee of $325. Our temporary use permits actually only allow for 60 days within any calendar year, and it also requires a compliance with city nuisance codes and noise codes. One thing I would like to point out, after their consultation with us, they decided, they said, thank you for all that information. Now we know what process we have to go through. They have now gone back to their particular church board and parishioners and are meeting with some consultants with Catholic charities to decide if and when they want to actually submit a particular request or a permit application. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. Yes?
So it's 60 days within a calendar year. It seems like somebody just gets to come to settle in and they have to move again. What if you do like November, December, January, February, so they get up 4 months consecutive?
Not under our existing city code. The city council obviously could, if they so decided, go back in and amend the city code. Currently, those are the regulations in place. If we got an application tomorrow, that's how we would have to do it. It says 60 days within any calendar period. And yes, you're right. If that happens at the end of the year, sometimes that can be to their detriment, but that's the way we have it at the current time.
I just need to get back up. 60 and 60
yep.
December 31st.
Yes.
Have you noticed an increase, mostly I suppose in Covington and the surrounding areas, because the property values are exorbitant. Seattle, Bellevue, Redmond, everybody seems to be moving south. That also means that the homeless people are moving south also.
I don't specifically have hard data and statistics on the number of homeless in Covington. All of our information is really sort of anecdotal in talking to our human service people and things like that. I can tell you our human services department has indicated to us that they've had increasing requests for specific services from people that tell them, I am homeless now. What do I do? Where can I go? What are the services that are available? They've told us anecdotally that those requests over the last couple of years are increased over what they were 5 years ago and 10 years ago. In my meetings and discussions with other community development departments and cities at the director's level, for community development directors, the suburban cities like Kent, Auburn, Renton, and so forth, have indicated they feel that there are increasing requests. And so those statistics, I think, are increasing in South King County and Southeast King County.
Thank you, Mr. Hart.
Yep.
Our next presentation is on the Green to Cedar River Trail and the long-term plan.
If you don't mind, if we sit down, if that's okay.
If I could, Madam Mayor, I think Dana has gotten a presentation.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So part of that, there were a couple of sub-bullets that I'd like to address. There's just one in particular on mental health issues. Thank you. Sorry.
I'll
do it from right here, but thank you. Yeah, no, we won't keep you long. So just really more of an update and just sort of create awareness of something that's been happening for a while now in Maple Valley. It's really exciting. Laura mentioned something about the excitement around community partnerships, and one of the great examples around that is a task force called the MID. It's the Mental Illness Drug Dependency Task Force. And really this grew oddly out of the school district passing the levy and or should say the bond and recognizing they have a massive undertaking in remodeling all of the schools and creating a new high school. And in order to do that, it was going to require laser focus. And part of that laser focus is really gaining clarity around what is their mission, what is it that they deliver to the community. And they recognize that they staff school counselors that really are trained as academic counselors. But those academic counselors often have lines that go out the door. In fact, the lines could be much longer, but so many kids need counseling help that is beyond academic counseling that they really weren't able to even get close to getting it, and they just have given up. And part of that just started a conversation, and that conversation grew to include direction from the school board and Rob Morrow, the superintendent of the school district, but also to include the Rotary, the City of Maple Valley, the community center. I mean, the list is extensive. Vine Maple Place, the local counseling community from across the region, Friends of Youth, Youth and Family Services, a variety of service and faith-based organizations, the food bank, Maple Valley Police, Maple Valley Fire and Life Safety. I know I'm forgetting several organizations. It's unbelievable when you see the emails. The line is this long. It's wonderful how many people have gotten involved. And really, it started with this group wanting to sort of frame the problem, recognizing with the school district saying, look, we have these kids who need help. They're not getting it. And is it really the school district's role to get the help, give them the help? If their mission is to educate, then they shouldn't be providing mental health counseling. But that doesn't mean that they get to abdicate the responsibility. And when the other organizations got involved, we all kind of recognized, oh my gosh, you're right. The need is way bigger than the resources. And we sort of recognized that, you know what, first we need to acknowledge that mental health is real and that it's acceptable to deal with mental health issues. Nobody chooses it any more than they choose cancer. It's the real thing, and we need to address it and acknowledge it, and it's okay. And that started, and I think there was sort of this sigh of relief in the room to say, okay, let's tackle this thing. What can we do? Now, when you have that many people in a room across that many organizations, usually it starts with a great idea and it just sort of dies and everybody gets busy. Well, that's not what's happening, and it's really, really exciting. So we recognize there's a need for counselors. There's a need for locations, if you had counselors, and then you need money to fund it. Well, Tom Sutton, as president of the Maple Valley Rotary, started some seed money and funding, pretty significant money, but again, there weren't counselors or location. This group was helping to sort of triangulate on the problem. The recognition across the room was that everybody knew people that needed help. A lot of the people in that room dealt with people who needed help, but we didn't even know where to turn to tell people, hey, you need help. I don't even know where to send you. Where do you go for it? And one of the fears in the group was, you know, what's next? What do we do? Does this die in the vine, or do we actually do something? Well, I'm really excited to inform everybody here that on June 12th, Nexus Youth and Family Services is actually going to be presenting to Maple Valley City Council with a proposed possible solution. We're still looking at locations, but they have counselors. And along with potentially some Rotary money, City Council is going to be looking at, I'm only speaking as one right now, but we're going to be looking at some initial funding. What Nexus can potentially do is create, with this initial funding, a momentum that allows this thing to continue. If we even brought in a couple of counselors, each counselor can handle maybe 30 to 40 cases, and then of course those cases turn, then we're taking that cycle, and we just heard about it, right? We just heard about, 25% of the homeless suffer from mental illness, 50% from substance abuse, and 19% of the homeless are under 25 years old. So a big chunk of these are youth, but a lot of them are also adults. And it's very exciting to see that this idea may be coming to fruition. I would invite anybody who's interested to come to the June 12th council meeting, hear the presentation, and then weigh in during the public comment session. So that's all I have. I just wanted to make sure everybody knew what was happening. It's just really, it's nice to see we can actually get some traction when you get a bunch of smart people in a room. So,
thank you.
Thanks.
That's, yes, yeah. Good, good. Yeah, I should have called that out. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, back to the regional trail. Could you introduce yourselves? I didn't get your information.
I'm Kevin Brown, a director for Parkinson County, and we have another colorful person with Gene White, who directs our regional trails program.
Thank you.
I see what you did there.
So thank you very much for the opportunity to come here tonight and give you an update on the trails in this area. This is actually the third time I've had the opportunity to talk with the Tri-City group, and the very first time was about 6 years ago in this very room, shortly after this idea came to fruition. So tonight we're going to be giving them an update on the Green to Cedar Rivers Trail, and we want to thank you first for all of your years of support as we've gotten to this point, from all of the cities and from Councilmember Dunn as well. We're going to talk a little bit about King County Parks in general, and then sort of do a dive into the trail project specifically. So King County Parks, we manage about 200 parks across King County from sort of Vashon Island to the foothills of Snoqualmie, from Pierce County to Snohomish County, and everywhere in between. We have about 175 miles of what we consider regional trails. And these are the trails similar to the Cedar River Trail, the Green River Trail, the Burke-Gilman. We also have roughly 250 miles of what we call backcountry trails. Unfortunately, the trail type that you were on yesterday, Laura. But those are primarily for hiking or equestrian use. Additionally, we manage about 28,000 acres of open space. So all in all, we're a pretty big system across King County. So I want to go back in time to how this project started about 7 years ago. I was having some conversations with park directors from Maple Valley, Black Diamond, and Covington, and they had met and had this idea that it would be great if the cities in the South End, these three cities in particular, could be better connected. One of the primary reasons is, again, something you've heard tonight, is everybody is growing, like crazy, and connecting cities, to schools, to employment centers, to neighborhoods was important then. I think it's even more important as we see what's happening today. So back in 2000, and I think it was 2009, we had that conversation down in Black Diamond and talked about what it would take to get a project up and running. And so the following year, we made it sort of formal. With the development of a working group that would move forward with the planning to connect the cities of Black Diamond to Maple Valley and a separate trail to head over to Covington. And here you'll see some of that partnership and a local article that was in the paper at the time. So tonight we're going to be talking about the Green to Cedar River Trail. And this was the first project that came out of this working group. We put together a feasibility study in place in 2012, and we studied different alignments, different design models, and how best to work together to connect the cities, where the trails would go, and how we could participate in that design process. Back in 2012, we were actually in the last year, we're on a six-year voter-approved levy, and we were starting to put forward the package for our next levy, which went out to voters in 2013. And so we talked to a lot of jurisdictions, a lot of our partners, about what projects are important to you and what projects are important to your communities to be considered for funding in our next levy. And the Green to Cedar River Trail actually was one of the highest-rated projects, and it got included in our 2014-2019 levy. And on this page, you'll see sort of the four areas of focus that we concentrate on, the first being taking care of our existing parks, making sure that they're clean, safe, and open. Growing and connecting our open space and natural lands. Good examples are along the Green River and along the Cedar River. We're buying contiguous lands for both habitat preservation, for recreation benefit, but connecting those open space lands. Additionally, improving regional trails and non-motorized mobility, making those connections from community to community, city to city, park to park. And finally, making parks and recreation opportunities more accessible. And when we talk about accessibility, we're talking about, you know, two different types of accessibility. One, you know, open for all types, all users, but two, that they're easy to get to in your neighborhood, your community. As Gina's going to dive deeper into the project, what we have here is this is sort of a snapshot of the trails in the Maple Valley area. And the dotted line represents the green to Cedar River, and you see it splits off from the Cedar River Trail at the very top. I'll be very frank with you. Reagan mentioned, Councilmember Dunn mentioned earlier, there's been some concerns about this particular trail and improving it. And one of the biggest reasons is the rural aesthetic that people enjoy in this part of the county. And they like that soft surface. But as we move forward with this project, we have to balance, you know, the needs of these communities, especially as they're growing and you're trying to, you know, provide for all types of users, how best to develop these trails. And so one of the conversations we've had is, in this particular area of King County, you'll see all of the open space in green and the large availability of those soft surface trails that can in many ways perform some of the same functions as you have on the current soft surface on the Green to Cedar River Trail. So I'm going to turn it over to Jean, and she's going to talk a little bit more about the specific project.
Great. So my name is Jean White, and I am the Regional Trail Program Manager. Really excited to be working on this program. Our mission with the Regional Trail Program is to expand and steward an accessible, interconnected network of regional trails. We're really fortunate in King County to have one of the largest networks of regional trails. I brought updated copies of our regional trail maps. So why invest in the regional trails? I want to talk a little bit about our vision for the regional trail program. We want to expand access and usability for all ages and abilities. So we want young people, old people, people with disabilities across King County to have access to regional trails. We want to promote active recreation for health and well-being. Our research shows that communities that have access to trails exercise more. And the benefits of exercise are well known. You know, we know that it reduces, helps with weight loss, it reduces heart disease, it can reduce the risk of some cancers, it can reduce anxiety and depression. It's good for us. We also invest in trails because it connects communities. They become places to gather, their paths to work and to school. They are also where you go to play. They also support a sustainable future. They provide an alternative to driving, which can reduce that traffic congestion that I heard all of you talk about in your city presentations tonight. So kids can walk or bike to school. People can walk and bike to run their errands. Some people can commute to work. So talk a little more about the Green to Cedar Rivers Trail. So once this trail is completed, it's going to be an 11-mile trail going from the intersection with the Cedar River all the way down to Flaming Geyser State Park on the Green River. It's going to connect the open spaces of Lake Wilderness, the Black Diamond open space, Lake Sawyer, all the way down to Flaming Geyser State Park. It's also going to connect the city of Renton to Maple Valley via the Cedar River Trail to Maple Valley and Black Diamond. And then eventually the city of Covington is going to be connected through the planned Covington Highlands Trail. That was part of that 2012 feasibility study that Kevin talked about. So this map is zooming in on the current project. It's the 3-mile segment of the trail from the intersection with the Cedar River Trail going to southeast Kangley Road. When this trail is completed, it's going to improve connections between the schools. You've got Lake Wilderness Elementary School. You've got that new Tahoma High School that's going to be right off just south of Kangley Road. It's going to improve connections also with the library, the community center, businesses, churches, and neighborhoods, all along this backbone of the city of Maple Valley. So this is showing key milestones in our project. So we had a kickoff meeting January 11th. Back in April, we came to the community with two alternative designs. This summer, we'll be coming back with a final alternative, our preferred selected alternative, then move into permitting, final design, and construction will be in the fall of 2018. There's also been a lot of interest in the south segment. You know, what happens when you go south of Kangley Road and head down to the Green River? So the good news on this is we also have funding for preliminary design for the south segment. And that's going to be starting this fall, and so we'll be seeking input on that preliminary design as well. So this is a picture of the East Lake Sammamish Trail, and I put it here because it's a good example of a trail built to the regional trail standard. What you see here is a 12-foot wide paved trail, and then you've got 2 foot of gravel shoulder on either side. And then you may not realize, but there's also a foot of clearance on either side where we wouldn't put a signpost or a fence or something where, that someone could run into. So that's what a regional trail, kind of our current standard is in King County. This is a picture of that our consultant did, an overlay of what it would be to do that trail standard on the existing Green to Cedar River Trail. So you can see that depending on where you are in the trail, you would either have to raise it or lower it to be able to go a little wider. You can see the existing trail width of the soft surface trail, it's about 10 feet. It would, the paved part would widen to 12, and you'd have the soft gravel shoulders within those dotted lines. So why do we build to that 12-foot regional trail standard? We are building to federal design guidelines for multi-use paths. This is nothing we made up. And it meets ADA guidelines. So we are also trying to increase access for all ages and ability. It's easier for kids on scooters, for people in wheelchairs, for parents pushing strollers. It just increases access and usability. It also improves safety. I know we've had some folks say, couldn't you do something narrower? You know, it's actually safer to have it be wider. You need more room to pass and have space for that safety. We're also building for the future. One of the things as we research this is if you look at the comprehensive plan for the city of Maple Valley, it's saying that by 2035, you're going to have 15,000 more dwelling units in the Maple Valley, Black Diamond, Covington area. It sounds like you're well on your way to that from the presentation I heard earlier. And that employment, both within the city and outside the city, is supposed to double. So you're going to have more trail users in the future. So we've had several public meetings on the Green to Cedar Rivers Trail. We had a very well-attended kickoff meeting Lake Wilderness Lodge on January 11th. We also formed a stakeholder group to help give input on design and to also help us with how do we engage the community better. We had a trail walk on April the 10th, and what this picture doesn't show is the hailstorm, two hailstorms and rainstorm that happened that day. So this was a hardy crew that was out there. And then in April, we had a meeting at Shadow Lake Elementary School to come present our two alternatives for the trail. We also had an online survey that ran May 1st through 11th. So folks that couldn't make the meeting or ones that did, you know, could weigh in on the options. So we heard a variety of things from the community. As Kevin alluded, we heard some strong voices saying they preferred the soft surface trail. They really liked that for running and biking and preferred that. We have also heard from people who support development of the trail and support it being having more access and more access for people with disabilities. People are interested in preserving the rural look and feel of the trail. They're also interested in more amenities, specifically more parking, more access to the trail from the neighborhoods, or, you know, being sure that what's there is there and improved. So we've definitely had input. So now I'm going to go into options with the Green to Cedar Rivers Trail. So again, this is our regional trail standard. So this would be that 12 foot of pavement, 2 foot gravel shoulder, 1 foot clear zone on either side. So the next two options I'll show are actually enhancements. They can kind of go beyond that regional trail standard. This option one is what we termed the separated option. And this was actually the preferred option that came out of that 2012 feasibility study. So you've got what is the regional trail standard on the right. And then on the left, you have an accessory soft surface trail that's 4 feet wide. It would go up and down with the landscape. It's not that kind of at grade, railroad grade. This is an unconstrained part of the corridor. Those of you who've been on the trail, I hope many of you have, if not all, there are many places it's constrained, particularly by Lake Wilderness or as you come into the four tunnels that are in this segment. So you can only have that side trail in about half of the corridor. Otherwise, it drops down and comes in beside the regional trail standard. It would widen on that left side to 4 feet. So option two is one that was developed in response to some of those comments that we had. And what we tried to do was ask our consultant, what happens if could you maximize the soft surface on one side of the trail for those people who prefer that for running and walking? And so this, again, is showing, you know, on the right-hand side, you've got that 2 foot shoulder, 1 foot clear, the 12 foot pavement, and then up to 8 feet of gravel on the left side and 1 foot clear. Now, again, in the constrained areas, this has to neck down. So it necks down to probably about 4 or 5 feet. So those were the options that we've done. I guess now I turn it back over to you, Kevin, to talk about the path forward.
So we're sort of at a critical juncture in this project, we've sort of shown three design options for consideration. And for this project, we have a budget of roughly $10 million to get a project on the ground. That budget, we know, will at least be able to deliver that first regional trail standard, which is the one that we use in pretty much most of our trails across the county. As we've looked at the other two options, our preliminary estimates are significantly higher than that, which makes this sort of a challenging endeavor. But as we anticipate that the design chosen is going to set the stage for future phases of this trail, as we make this decision, the financial implications could be significant in the context of if we do this in Maple Valley, one type in Maple Valley, we would carry that through Black Diamond and similarly into Cuffington. One of our consistency across the trails is really important for the users enjoying that. So in the coming weeks, we're going to be refining our design and our cost estimates as we make a formal decision. I know it's hard to sort of present this to you for a formal decision, but I guess what we're asking for tonight is, that continued support for a paved trail that would connect these cities and these communities, these neighborhoods. Again, we have heard some concerns from stakeholders, from the cross-country team, and from some others who like that rural feel of a trail or that soft surface to run on. We feel that we can meet those needs on the other portion of the Cedar River Trail that goes to Landsberg, or the many soft surface trails you saw adjacent to the city of Maple Valley. However, those are not voices that we want to completely ignore, but we're at a situation where we do need to make some decisions moving forward. So with that, I think that we'd like to sort of open it up to questions. Either way, I think, you know, this trail, you know, as you all talked about all the great things that are happening in your cities, celebrating 20 years here and 20 years there and just the long history of the connectedness between the cities, it will be a great asset. And as we looked at, you know, connecting to the Cedar River Trail, connecting to the Covington Highlands Trail, connecting to the Sioux Creek Trail in the future, it's just going to be an unbelievable asset for South King County. So.
I have a few. First of all, I listened to your presentation before, and one thing that was mentioned in the previous presentation was that the tunnels are going to be lighted, and that's pretty amazing, you know, because there's a couple of tunnels out there. There's the big rock. You know, I never ride my bike. I get off my bike and walk through them. Which is less expensive, the 8-foot soft beside, or the to build, or the 4-foot kind of wandering through the woods? Which one's less expensive?
There is one version, and I'm not going to. That's like roughly $1 million less than of the others. But we're talking generally, like right now, we're looking at like roughly $10 million, and then we go up to almost $14 and $15 million when we look at options 1 and 2. And so the challenge is the wider the footprint you have to develop on a railroad prism means lots of cuts, lots of fill, lots of retaining walls that you would need to put in place.
Okay, so that answers that question. And do you have those survey results yet?
So we definitely have the results, and I would say we have not published them yet.
Okay.
But since Councilmember Moon was at the meeting, you probably understand. So option 2 seems to be preferred by more folks that were on the survey.
Okay, perfect.
Really quick follow up: how many people were involved in the survey?
84 people took the survey.
Councilmember Deedy.
Okay, so Councilmember Deedy. So I like option 1, and I'm out on the Black Diamond open trails, and I walk the Cedar River. I think option 1 was pretty good. I know that for me, walking out with a friend or with my family is kind of, you know, it's a little dangerous when you get the bicycles right behind you and you get, you know, the horses. And that option 1 just seemed better, you know, option to get. So you got your ADA citizens out there to be able to be participating on those trails. And like you said, if you can just maybe explain a little bit. So the railroad bed is what you would be looking at making the pavement part of it. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then the branches off of that would stay the gravel open space, right?
Yes, it'd be a 4-foot trail that rises and lowers with the landscape.
Right.
So it sometimes would be further away. It sort of snakes through the trees. But it could be there for about half the corridor, but when things get tight, it has to drop in next to the paved trail.
And I just
there were definitely others who also, you know, I don't mean to say, oh, option 1 was, everybody loved option 2. There were votes for both.
Sure. And I just, you know, as far as you got families, like you were saying, with strollers and the little kiddos, you know, some like to wear the little wheelie shoes. And, you know, you've got kids just, you know, running around, enjoying, not necessarily paying attention to, you know, who's coming up behind you. And I just think a wider paved area, you know, on some of those trails are a benefit to all of our citizens. you know, especially your ADA people who would like to get out and enjoy the amenities that we all have to enjoy, whether we want to stay on that trail or veer off onto the veins of other trails. So I just think, you know, that's better. And all three of our cities have an aging population right now that would really like to be participating. And I know that all of our cities are trying to get, you know, the sidewalks put in and to connect everybody. And I just think, you know, at the ground floor, at this project, it would be good to right off the bat include those citizens in what you're doing. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Sean Smith. I'm Mayor Pro Tem here at Covington. I appreciate your presentation. I got a few questions, too, so if you indulge me.
Sure.
Just to start, strong supporter trail. They live close to Seuss Creek. Spent a lot of time on that trail with my kids. I'm sorry, I'm just now kind of getting up to speed on this, but I have a few background questions,
sure.
If you don't mind. You mentioned something about the Covington Highlines Trail. What's the kind of projected date for when that might break ground or start?
Well, we are looking at the alignment right now, trying to come up with a final alignment. We've been working to secure some parcels, but it would probably, my guess is it's not yet within our six-year CIP.
Okay.
It might. We have another levy that potentially would come out in 2019. That might be a project that could be funded through that, similar to how this project was funded.
Okay, appreciate that. You mentioned that the paved trail, the 12 feet and then basically 18 feet of right-of-way, meets with regional trail standards and federal use guidelines. Is the regional trail standards that a county ordinance that requires this? And then I have a follow-up on the federal.
So we actually follow two transportation, federal transportation guidelines, NUTCD, which is the Manual for Uniform Traffic Control Devices, and then ASHTO, which is American Association of Safety Highway Transportation Officials.
I'm impressed. I couldn't do that yet.
And, you know, they make recommendations on, you know, trail widths based on location, use, standards, safety. And so we've had a regional trails program in place since the 1970s. We have updated our standards based on what the federal guidelines are on several occasions.
Okay. So possibly anticipate my second question. So you mentioned those federal guidelines. Am I assuming correctly that we're paving these in part to meet those guidelines, and we also take federal funds, which would require us to do these sorts of things?
So the paving itself, I think, was driven by the original request by the three cities to make this a more usable, functional trail. I think folks saw it as a soft surface. It was a nice trail that, you know, was functional. But to get greater use out of it and greater connectivity, the city thought we would like to see this be like the Burke-Gilman, like the Sammamish Valley Trail, like the Green River or Cedar River Trail in Renton.
Right.
So I think that's that the paving portion came from.
Okay, but am I understanding correctly? The presentation makes it sound like we have to have a paved trail in order to meet these guidelines. But I'm wondering if the second part of that is we're taking federal funds, which is requiring us to pave.
No.
So no
federal funds are in this project.
So we're choosing to meet federal guidelines with these trails. What I'm trying to get at, is there an ordinance? Is there a law that's requiring us to pave this trail?
So there is not a law to pave this trail. We
could
leave it soft surface.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's actually one of the underlying, I guess, decisions we're hoping to get from folks tonight. There's not a law that states it has to be done.
Okay.
The standards we have in place were based on, you know, a significant amount of, you know, dedication to resources.
And so I appreciate that. I think the presentation, just if I give a little bit, made it sound like we have to have this paved trail. So I'm not I think the thing I'm concerned about is the cost associated with, can you give me a little more related to a unpaved trail and a paved trail? I said $10 million. That's a fair amount of money, and makes me wonder if the Highlands Trail is 6 years out, what if the economy goes south?
Sure.
Where are we? We're not are we not likely to get that trail? So those are just some.
Well, I think that, you know, trails are very expensive. Yeah. Paved trails are very expensive to build. You are basically building a road.
Right.
You're required to have, drainage.
Yep.
Lots of walls, especially in these types of railroad prisons, are required. Lots of fill. These types of trails are very expensive to develop. And it's impossible to tell the future in terms of what trails might happen or not. But I can tell you in the last 10 years, we've probably been developing more trails than we have because, one, cities are looking to connect themselves. But, two, non-motorized transportation is, you know, huge in this region. We have trails right now, East Lake Sammamish Trail, from Redmond through Sammamish to Issaquah. We have the Lake to Sound Trail, which is in partnership with cities of Renton, Tukwila, SeaTac, Burien, and Des Moines. We have trails that go through roughly 30 cities. So it's impossible to, you know, forecast whether the Covington Highlands Trail, when it might get done. But we've been moving faster on trails than we have historically based on the demand and sort of the eagerness to address sort of climate change and non-motorized transportation.
And then finally, and I'll quit, can you talk to the if any maintenance costs associated with these trails for these cities?
So as this would be a regional trail, and that's one of the difficult issues, is that We work with lots of cities as partners, but these truly are regional trails in that they connect the cities, and we maintain those trails. Mm-hmm. King County does, so the burden is not placed on the city to maintain.
Okay. John? That's all I have.
Yeah, I have a historical question. This is more probably like for Councilor Hardo or Johnson or Moon from when you guys were on the council back in the day. Was there a consensus under, did you guys vote at the Tri-City meeting to support this, or... Is that what you guys did back? Because you said that you came 6 years ago. I've been five.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
or Greg, were you around? Or give me some history. Because they want some directions tonight, so I don't know if we can do that here.
Consensus is something you can have. If the direction requires some formalized action by council, you can certainly go back and do that. But I remember that meeting. It was pretty exciting to say that we wanted to have trails that connected all three of our cities, and we wanted to move in that direction. So that was the kind of decision that we made that night in partnership with King County. And this is where we are today. And we weren't getting down in the weeds.
Because they
built more trails than we ever will. And our communities have experienced tremendous growth since then. So I'm so glad that we made that decision and are able to partner with King County.
So I wanted to ask a question about, is that trail there paved? Is that a 12-foot paved trail?
That's also a picture of the East Lake Sammamish Trail. So
what I was going to ask you is, you're talking about the cost of having it paved. So is this something that you do in phases? So you could get the trail so it was connected first and then phase in the paving over time?
So yes, it is phased. You know, a significant portion of the green cedar is in place. There are some breaks in it, but we chose as a group, as part of the feasibility study with all of the partners in place, to focus on this particular phase as the first one.
Let's let Megan go, because let's let everybody speak once first before we go back to double duty.
Thank you. So, a couple of questions. First, I guess I'm struggling with the difference in connection and paving. I mean, why, if the trails there were missing a couple of spots, why isn't it a choice to make those connections? Because then we are connected. We're doing, I think, you spoke about, they didn't get into the weeds of exactly what they requested that you do. So why the push to pave?
and not just make those connections, because we have the ability to then connect. And then my other question, I guess, is going down to the $10 million. Where does that money go if you don't use it to pave? And then, yes, cross-country. I guess number three is cross-country still upset. So how are we handling and
so
supporting our kids?
The question of why we're doing this section versus the connection is based on the request by the three cities in consultation with King County. In all honesty, we're not trying to drive a project, mm-hmm. you know, into your cities. We're responding, you know, based on your needs. That's sort of how our trails come to fruition. Is, you know, folks come to us and say, hey, how do we make this alignment? And that's particular to the Covington section. The Highlands, Covington Highlands Trail, that was never in any planning document until this feasibility study came into play. And so a lot, what's been recommended is a result of the feasibility study, the partners sort of prioritizing this particular phase as the first phase over connection. You had another question, or two more after
yeah.
that.
Okay. Where does the $10 million go if you don't use it here?
So we have about $500 million worth of regional trails need across the county. I mentioned the Lake of Sound Trail. We've got five phases of that trail that we're working on. Gene could probably speak to the Seuss Creek Trail, the Green River Trail, Snoqualmie Valley Trail, Sammamish River Trail. We have active needs or projects in all of those areas.
So we would either use it now or lose it.
Part of it is, you know, we have a responsibility. This is on a voter-approved levy. We need to spend these dollars within a certain amount of time and get a project done so that when we go back to voters, we're able to say, you know what, you entrusted us with these dollars to do this thing. You know, what we would end up doing is we didn't do that thing, but we did another thing very similar because of that's what would most likely happen.
So my third one was our cross-country kids. I mean, obviously, you know, we can go down the epidemic of what's happening with our kids and all of those negative things. So a huge positive is having our kids out running on these trails.
Yep.
And you saw it, I mean, it's one meeting, not to mention it, with city council, not to mention what was attended. How are you getting them onto other trails? What are you doing to actively work with them to make sure that they can safely leave the high school, get out of the green portions there and keep them safe?
So Jean has had lots of conversations. I think we ended up in a good space, but I'm going to let her speak to that.
Well, I'll try. So one of the things we did was we actually added a member of the cross-country team to our stakeholder group to help with designing the trail. She's wonderful. And so she got to be on that trail, you know, be a little more involved and engaged to help us work with how to do that. We also reached out to Coach Brady and talked to him about the other soft surface trails in the area, asked if he wanted to meet with some of our backcountry trail experts who know those backcountry trails far better than I do. And he told me, I run all of those trails. I know them really well. Thank you. I think one of the biggest things that he told me is that they really just, they wanted to feel heard. I also followed up to make sure that members of the cross-country team took the survey. They were not at that April 27th meeting, and I'm not sure if there was, I think there may have been, I'm not sure. They weren't there at that, but I did ping them and ask, hey, there aren't that many people under 21 who have taken this, because you can see that dynamics, and I know that got up the numbers a little bit. I know Coach Brady said that it made a big difference to him that they felt heard and that they saw some options that had more soft surface trail being looked at.
And we understand that it's a challenge, and I mean, there's a lot of passionate trail users out there. And we're, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we're trying to provide some alternatives or some options where perhaps some folks may not know about, but others that just, you know, it might be a change in habits, in all honesty. But we do feel for the soft surface issue with the Cedar River Trail and all of the other green spaces with trails, there are some options to that.
Thank you.
Yes, Jamie.
Oh.
So my question, since I do walk on the really unimproved trail, like the railroad track bed that's from 288 south and all through the woods of that 15 miles worth of trails, what is it that you're actually looking to get from us tonight? Just a consensus? Is that enough for you to go forth and go do, or do you need something official from the cities, like we need to pass a resolution, or is somebody just not here but within our own city councils to pass a resolution then saying, yes, we support this activity?
I'm not sure we need anything formal, but I think first and foremost is soft surface or paved. And, you know, that's the biggest, the folks who we've had conversations with and show that passion, it's the paving issue. And we totally understand that, but in order to make, you know, all, in order to sort of honor all those conversations, commitments that we've had over the last, you know, 6-7 years, it would be a paved trail. And I think so that's, you know, we'd like to just confirm that that's the direction that the cities do support. As we move forward.
Dana?
So I guess I'm still struggling with a couple of things, and I was at that meeting in 2011, and similar to what then Mayor Harto said, I don't believe we got down to the detail of paved versus unpaved. I think at that time we were talking about connectivity, and there was resounding support for increasing the trails and the connectivity, and seeing this map as just this incredible opportunity to connect our communities in a non-motorized fashion. Phenomenal. Very much support that. I think about how we developed the national highway system in the 1920s. We didn't pave the roads from coast to coast. We created a network of roads because it was important to have that connectivity.
We kind of need to move on, so if you can keep your comments short, because we need to move on.
Okay, so I guess I'm still, I would rather see the $10 million spent in developing a robust network that connects the communities rather than paving 3 miles of trails through Maple Valley.
So I want to quickly respond is that, again, this was not our direction to make this project.
Yeah.
It was the cities coming to us and saying the preference was the paving over the connectivity. And I'm just going to be blunt and honest, is we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we have a project that's approved for paving. Acquisition is a completely different set of dollars and funding sources than what this project is. So changing the scope it just challenges the project moving forward.
Fair enough. You asked for input.
I
don't get me wrong. I greatly value the partnership. The improvements you're making are phenomenal. I think there's a different way to do it. Yeah.
Marla?
Just thinking back 2 years ago, how excited I was for this to happen. I'm going, is this going to happen in my lifetime? And when we were talking about the trail, you know, you look at the trail, it goes all along the Cedar River, it's all paved. Just assumed it was going to be a paved trail, and I can give you some really good reasons.
Why don't we just get some consensus? We need to move on.
Okay.
We have a bunch more on the agenda, so.
Access by emergency vehicles is really important.
So, do we just want to give a hands up for?
Hands up for paving? Are you asking for paving or just continue?
Just to continue your work.
Actually, we're asking for paving. We will, to the extent, improve any soft surface we can with any additional dollars, but we're right now it's our standard regional trail. That's what we're hoping that we will get from you tonight.
Yeah,
let's just keep
moving. I'm good with it.
Okay,
you got mine. Option two.
Okay.
So with that, we will move forward with at least the basic regional trail we have in our standard. As funding is available to do additional soft surface improvements to address community needs, we'll include that.
Okay.
Okay.
That sounds good.
Thank you very much.
Kim, I just want to say thanks for your guys' partnership on this. You guys held meetings. She's gotten beat up a couple times at meetings. Horrible by the citizens. Thank you very much.
Well, that last slide, I said this is going to be an incredible asset, you know, to the region. You know, when it's all connected and paved, or you know, great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we have a police officers or chiefs and commander from our own communities to just talk about what the issues are in our communities. So if you want to come up and introduce yourselves.
Good evening. I'm Andrew McCurdy. I'm the chief of police here for the city of Covington.
And I'm Commander Martini for the Black Diamond Police Department.
Is one of our chiefs here?
He's going to step out to take a call. He may be back in just a moment. Jamie couldn't be here tonight because she was suddenly ill. So
here I am.
So here we are.
We like you too.
Yeah, thank you.
So I want to start by saying that, nationally, law enforcement has faced a bit of a crisis. It's a crisis of trust and legitimacy. One of the reasons I became chief here in Covington specifically is because I don't think that that same crisis exists here. I think you all are all very lucky in that you live in communities that are very safe. You have very low violent crime rates. Not speaking about us as commanders and chiefs, but speaking about the police officers that are out there protecting all of you while you're asleep at night, you should be very proud of the quality of service that's provided. And a lot of the reasons that there is trust and legitimacy here is because of the professionalism and the quality provided by those officers out there on the street. So I just want to start by saying that to remind all of you how fortunate you are. Chief Nessel, you want to introduce yourself there real quick?
Hi, I'm Chief DJ Nessel of the Maple Valley Police Department.
So as I said, the issues of trust and legitimacy across the nation, I don't think we have the same ones here. When Jamie and DJ and I sat down to talk about what we would discuss at this meeting in regards to public safety problems, we looked at each other and we said, what are our public safety problems? We looked at each other and said, we don't have any. We all agreed that the public safety issues we see in other parts of the world and in other parts of the country don't exist here. But I do think we are three unique communities that have very different needs when it comes to public safety. And I also think that all of our needs revolve around resources and a need for more resources. As a community grows, all the different parts of that community require different resources. And in the middle of the night when somebody's in crisis, regardless of what type of crisis they're in, when they call for help, we as police officers are the ones who respond. When we respond and we don't have resources in the community to help get those members of our community out of that crisis, then it becomes a crime issue or a crime problem. And that's really not the best. We kind of rest our way out of a lot of the issues that we're facing in our communities now. Homelessness, drug addiction, mental health, those are not things we can rest our way out of. So when we start looking at crime rates, really what we're looking at is a community that's lacking the resources it needs for its members of its community that are in crisis. Because for somebody to be willing to commit crime, they have to be lacking in certain resources and be desperate to be able to commit those crimes. I can speak on behalf of Covington, and when we were talking, I'd say Covington's crime problems are very unique in the Tri-City area. Our crime rate and our number of calls of service per officer are more comparable to Auburn, Federal Way, Kent, and Burien than they are to Maple Valley and Black Diamond. We in the middle of the night still go down to one officer in the city often. We have at least two officers working in the city the rest of the time. But one of our resource issues is even if we deal with a lot of the underlying issues and causes of crime, we do still have 911 calls we need to respond to. So as the community continues to grow, we've been working really closely with the city to talk about those issues and to try to figure out how to measure our needs. Again, in Covington, Maple Valley, Black Diamond, the crimes that we typically have are crimes of opportunity and crimes of desperation. We can start to address those issues in two ways. We can deal with underlying issues by throwing other resources at them, those resources I mentioned earlier, or we could throw more cops at it. Traditionally, we have gone more toward just throwing more cops at the issues, but I think that what we really need is a collaborative approach. And you're going to see a lot more steps in that way in the coming months and years. Here in Covington, we're opening a Crime Victim Resource Center. It's going to be a regional effort to bring some advocates here that are going to be able to interact with victims of crime to make sure they have some resources they need to get out from under the impacts of being a victim of a crime. We know that our three agencies have a history of working very well together. We work together on a task force to deal with drug-related issues. We are involved in a number of different programs and groups that discuss how we're going to deal with these issues. But more importantly, in the middle of the night, while most of you are probably in bed asleep, it's the officers in our three agencies that work together to make sure that your needs are addressed. I don't want Covington to be a cautionary tale, and I'm sure our city council don't want that either. But I will say that in Covington, as the police chief, what I've noticed is that there's two Covingtons. There's the residential Covington, the one that was here back in the 90s when I was a patrol officer in Covington. And we also now have the retail side of Covington. The retail side where we have a lot of businesses, particularly large retail businesses. We also have high density and affordable housing that has its own needs. We spend the bulk of our time here along Kent Kingley Road responding to retail high density housing calls, and it's to the detriment of our residential members of our community. So as we move forward, we're trying to figure out better ways to address those needs. Again, I don't want us to be a cautionary tale, but I know both of your communities are growing, creating more commercial and retail space, and I just want to make sure that hopefully some of the lessons we've learned as a city in those regards can benefit all of you as well. But just know that it's a resource issue. The police resources are very important, but what those cops can do to help people in the middle of the night are just as important as well. So again, we talk about police issues, we hear drug addiction, homelessness, so on and so forth. When those become a crime problem or a police problem, it's gone too far, and it's because the resources to intervene early weren't there. So I'm happy to answer any other direct questions or if you guys want to add anything. But
The one thing I just wanted to add, one thing I wanted to add and kind of just talk about is about the resources that the chief was talking about is something that's very important that we have up front. We talk about our development in Black Diamond with our residential area. That's going to be a huge development. It's going to affect all of our cities. You look at the traffic now in the morning, and any of you guys that have to travel on 169 going down to Renton, it's a nightmare. That's why I love my little 10-minute world. I live in Maple Valley, work in Black Diamond, I shop in Covington. This is like my little 10-15-minute world, which I love, and I don't like to leave. So having those resources available, like the chief was talking about, are important. That includes the staffing of your police personnel. As we're going down with Black Diamond, we're going to potentially quadruple our population, within the next 15 to 20 years, which in turn is going to cause a lot of spike in traffic and in crime. We look at Covington, they have their big box stores, there's robberies, there's theft, there's prowlers, they're dealing with big city problems on a medium-sized base. And, be on top of that, with staffing, with the resources, that's what's going to stop crime. And when we're a proactive police department and not a reactive, that's when crime rates are low. So we're fortunate in Black Diamond where we're able to do that. We don't have the call volume that Maple Valley does or that Covington does, so we're able to be proactive with our officers. And, we're out there with the community. I just talked recently to a radio station where one of my first calls to Black Diamond was hanging a door. That was a 911 call. Did I get to do that in Albuquerque where I retired? No, absolutely not. We were a reactive police department where we're, taking the shooting calls, the robbery calls, everything else. We appreciate the support. We're lucky to have a city council that supports the police, and because of that, we're one of the safest cities in the state. So thank you for that.
I think most of it's been said, but I just some of the stuff that was presented earlier about our trail systems, Highway 516, 169, and then Highway 18. I think I've presented to my council before. I call it the unholy triangle transportation that brings in a lot of what I would consider our more hardened crimes. The guy that pulls up to the Walgreens and sticks the crowbar in and makes off within 29 seconds the cash machine. Well, they're not our residents. They're not even our kids that are slightly, devilish. It's people from these other cities, and where are they coming from? They're using our highway systems or our trail systems. and coming in from the unincorporated parts or from our sister cities to the east, west, north, and south. It's not saying that we don't have our little shares of crimes, but most of our stuff is the growing commercial base. And every generation of our kids, when they grow up, I was no different. I got into police work by being a hellion down and growing up in Los Angeles and getting arrested by LAPD. And you know, when you got too much time on your hands, we're going to put you in X-Force. So, and I'm here today. So everybody can be cured. But what's unique is, and what I'm so proud of and why I'm here and have literally gone all in, I sold my house last year, moved into Maple Valley. And why? Because we're living the dreams that most of us signed up for law enforcement many, many years ago. Why do you want to do this job? I want to help people. I want to be part of it. So we're not chiefs or commanders or bosses that are like sitting behind a desk in like large departments. We're working bosses. You got to be out there. You got to be willing to sling a radar. You got to be willing to arrest somebody, do the paperwork, and kind of boutique policing. But as Andy put it, and I'm glad I'm not in his chair, because as the chief of Covington, he really does have his work cut out, because in that triangle of transportation, even though Maple Valley is on Highway 18, kind of what I call our big core commercial center is off in Four Corners, and we have a trail leading up to that, but his is right off of 18 and right down the Kangley from Kent. And I see what's exposed and what he's dealing with, and it's tough. And in all of our budgets, that's what I want to get across. We do more in our police departments, all of our police departments, with less. All our people are cross-trained. You know, you have one officer and say, what do you do? Well, maybe in the sheriff's office or Seattle PD is, well, I'm a patrol officer. What do you expect? I drive a 911 driven car. Greg Victor, what is your I'm the traffic enforcement car, I'm the explorer advisor, I'm a patrol 911 reactive, and I'm whatever else the boss throws at me, including this. So you really, really get super bang for your buck, and sometimes you just reach a saturation point where sometimes you do have to add police officers, but in other things we're looking at adding the nexus, adding counselors and stuff to break those homeless numbers you saw up there. I could give you some that more true to life anecdotal. The majority of people we run into, they are addicted. They are, you know, alcohol, drugs, and a lot of mental health. And I'll throw this out there and throw myself under the bus. I have always been perturbed about, on a national basis, what we've done to our mental health over the past few decades. And the way to fix it, we're going to throw tons of grant money at law enforcement nationwide, teach them how to deal with mental illness so we don't shoot them or hurt them. Then we do our jobs these days. We put them in the ambulance. We send them for mental health care. And faster than we can get back into our cities and our districts, they're out. That's just wrong. That's the crisis. We are not mental health professionals, yet we're being used as the Band-Aid. And then when we try to do our job, we need more hospitalization capability and bed space, and need to take care of our mental health people, because guess what? They're our brothers, our sisters, our moms, our dads, and everybody wants to hide and say, well, no, I don't want anybody to know. But guess what? It's all of our families, and we need to get over it and take care of one another. So that's my soapbox.
Really quick, so that might be something for Tri-Cities for next year, mm-hmm. when we go under Olympia, to talk to our legislators and say we need more beds for our mental health victims. So maybe the two city managers can write this down. So next year when we start talking about our legislative agendas for next year, this would be something to help our first responders. So.
And not to beat up on the Seattle Corps, but a lot of the mid money where that originally started is King County. There's tax money that's taken out from the King County voters. And where's all that money going? It's going down to the Corps. But we can't call up on a Friday night when I have a mentally ill person sleeping on the side of the Chevron across from the Playmore Tavern, who says, can I help you? And he says, yeah, you know, I have no bed for him. I call around, and finally I get Union Gospel to say, you can bring him down here. I can put him on the floor. I'll take it. I got to drive an hour and a half to get this poor guy a place down there, but he's local here. And he doesn't want to go home. You know why? Because he knows that if he goes back in the environment he was in, he's going to get back on the heroin. And he's like, that's why I'm sleeping here, officer. And I'm like, wow, the guy wants help, but I have nowhere local to put him. So we need some of those monies that are being taken from our tax dollars and some facilities more local here to take care of our people. So.
Margaret?
I've always believed that public-private partnerships are really essential when it comes to solving some of our community problems. We have a great partner coming to have a presence now, and we'll have an even greater presence to be working on, and that's MultiCare Health System. They place at the top of their list the issue of behavioral health. And I think any time we can bring them into this conversation, it will be to our advantage, whether it's lobbying down in Olympia, whether it's finding a solution here in our community, which is really where we need to find the best solution, whether it's partnering with our school professionals to nip it in the bud way down the line. That public-private partnership is crucial, and we have a partner right here.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, thank you for your service. We appreciate how hard you guys work. We know that you all are out in the field working every day, too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I appreciate the presentation, and I appreciate the work that our police forces do. And Chief McCurdy, I also appreciate that we don't have the trust and legitimacy issues that maybe other communities do, but I did hear in kind of the conversation that our crime is growing, our community is growing, and that currently a number of our criminals are coming from elsewhere. And so I think that threat to our legitimacy is actually greater than maybe we anticipate. It would take one questionable shooting from someone coming into our community from somewhere else, and all that hard work we've done may go out the window. So I think maybe for a future agenda, we need to be thinking about how we possibly anticipate that crisis. What do we do in that issue? Because I think our community will support our police force, but someone coming from outside, if it looks hinky at all, we'll be behind the eight ball. So anyway.
Thank you again.
Sure. Can I point out one person? Major Thomas, actually, he's the new commander for the Southeast Precinct. I just want to make sure everybody knows who he is. He's actually their boss.
We're going into the city to help them. Right? That's kind of the beauty of the way that we have this part of the business set up. There are no boundaries. We all help each other. We get the job done. We get beyond what we need to do, and then we go back to normal. We go back to our regular responsibilities. But yeah, right on our heads. We need a lot more resources to do what we're doing. I'd love to have a lot more police officers. We understand that that's kind of difficult, but we are doing an incredible job and being as good as we are, how little we have. And that can't be emphasized enough. It has to do with cross-training. The training that we get from the time we hire them, the time they go through the academy, the time they come out of the academy. We're doing a lot of different stuff out there. Stop and talk to one of your cops and say, what do you do? And you'll be amazed. The amount of experience and the amount of latitude that they get. I know that Chief McCurdy has actually been involved in a lot of the training programs. He actually worked with me at one time in the training programs down at the academy. Fantastic stuff. We need to keep those things going also. Because the better we are, the more we are, it's a force multiplier, to making sure that all these efforts are addressed and taken care of. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So we have two more presentations left. We're going to do emergency management. I think we can make this go really fast because they're going to do something in the future. So we can get emergency management up here. And then when we do the transportation bit, I think we're going to have to shorten it a little bit.
Good evening. So we will try and make this fast. But the first thing we're going to start with, actually, is we're having an earthquake right now. What do you do? What do you do?
We got to get them.
What do you do?
My knees are killing.
What do you do, audience?
Hi there. When we got the last earthquake, everybody got around me because if it hit me first, they're safe. Sorry.
Everybody? All right.
Oh, I saved my
phone. Okay. You okay? All right.
Somebody took my wallet.
All right, did everybody check their neighbor? Is your neighbor still there?
Yes.
Everyone safe?
Let me tell.
The shaking stopped. All right. So part of that was just merely an exercise in getting all of you that maybe this meeting's drug on a little bit. Not that the topics weren't interesting, but when you sit for a long period of time, you start to go to sleep. We fed you. We made you sit. The room's getting a little warm. It was a drill to wake you up. But also, as we start talking about emergency management, how many of you knew exactly what to do at that particular moment? Honestly. No judgment. All right. Look around at the people that didn't. You represent a community. How many of your community members didn't know what to do? So when you think about you just heard from your law enforcement, they talk about resources, they talk about the vulnerable populations that we're dealing with, our homeless, our drug addicted, our mentally ill. Those are our most vulnerable populations. As long as we can deal with the rest of our population, then maybe we can start looking at theirs. However, they're the ones that don't have the resources to begin with. So you throw in some sort of natural disaster. It could be something localized. It could be an earthquake. It could be a storm. It could be a snowstorm. And then what do you do with them? They already don't have resources. Your law enforcement doesn't have the resources to deal with them. And therefore, your city limits in and out of are going to be taxed. So with that, is everybody awake? Everybody with us?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm Shauna Lee Rice. I'm the city clerk, public information officer, and emergency manager for the city of Maple Valley.
Shelley Bates, city of Covington, public works and emergency management.
Kevin Espring, city of Black Diamond, emergency manager, facilities coordinator.
So what you'll hear from all of that is we have multiple jobs within our daily work for our cities. We take all three of our jobs, four of our jobs, sometimes five of our jobs very seriously, but we've heard on numerous occasions from these councils, all three of you, that emergency management is a priority. So that's why we're here tonight. Sure. Thank you. So if you look at these areas, the shaded areas are all three of our cities, but you also see the areas around that are represented by our Sheriff's Department, our Parks Department, King County, unincorporated area. We have a lot of area out here that has quite a few residents, infrastructure, critical infrastructure, including water districts, wastewater, sewer, gas lines, power, open space. We also have a lot of bridges. How many bridges do you drive over to get in and out of your cities? If those bridges are either not in existence any longer or you don't feel safe driving over them, how are you going to sustain, get your traffic in and out, and sustain within your city limits? So just a couple of administrative, just so that you understand, a lot of the rules that we abide by, we don't make them up. They actually really exist. I'll let you read through them all on your own time. They're quite fascinating, actually. Well, if you like that sort of thing. So, a couple of things if you want to remember back to our community emergency preparedness fair. So, this has evolved over the last 20 plus years, and it was in existence before some of our cities were even cities. However, it's evolved to the point now where it's the city-driven emergency preparedness fair. It's no longer just a community emergency preparedness fair. The previous supporters of this have really, their roles have changed. They've lost some of their volunteer opportunities, so we've really taken this on. So last year, we decided we would come up with a theme, something that all three cities could really buy into that was very simple, it was catchy, it was easy for people to remember. Are you ready? And so what does that mean? It could mean something for anyone. Something different. So the Community Emergency Preparedness Fair, which, by the way, is September 30th this year, in conjunction with the last Maple Valley Farmers Market at Rock Creek Elementary. I encourage all of our council members to attend and or volunteer. And or volunteer. Okay, make sure everybody got that. So we have a yearly shakeout drill. We have fire alarm drills. Most of our kids experience them throughout their school years, but for whatever reason, when we get into the adult world, we don't practice them as much. When we are just as vulnerable when we're at work. We're at our safe place, we're at our computer, something happens and everyone freezes. What am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to get under my desk? Am I supposed to get out? Do I stop, drop, and roll? Not during an earthquake. Although, you know, you panic. You go back to what you remember. It's an earthquake. Stop, drop, and no. Drop, cover, and hold. So if you're not practicing, but your kids will help you remember. If you don't have kids in school, maybe your neighbor will help. Maybe the neighbor kids will help. But keep in mind, it's something that if it's not fresh on your mind, it's not going to be fresh probably on your neighbor's mind. So the more sustainable you are, the more self-sufficient you are, the better off a resource you'll be for yourself, your family, and your neighborhood. All of our responsibilities are listed up here. I won't read them to you. The last one, the Public Works Interlocal Agreement, I would like Sally to touch on that just really quickly so that all of you remember what we do currently with our individual public works departments.
Okay, we currently have an interlocal agreement between the three cities, and we are able to share resources in public works, mainly in public works, but also like our community development department has some interlocal agreements as well for plan review and inspection services. But we also have joined efforts for our Department of Ecology Coordinated Prevention Grant. That's something that the City of Maple Valley currently administers for Black Diamond and Covington and Maple Valley. And then we have our joint street sweeping contract that we've been with the City of Maple Valley for, I think, close to 10 years on that joint agreement. And the City of Covington administers that contract. We also have a joint facility where we store de-icer for the City of Maple Valley. So we coordinate the storage, usage, and payment of that. And we also do a joint crack sealing program each year with the City of Maple Valley, where some of our staff go over there for a few days or a week and do crack sealing, and then some of their staff comes over here and helps our staff. So we have a bigger force to sort of just crank it out. So we've been doing that for many years, and it just seems to work really well with our limited resources. So why that's important is part of it is that public works, law enforcement, and fire services are who are on scene in any event. A lot of times people just think fire and police services, but public works specifically is out there, this is not just not more. They've got the resources, they've got the equipment, they've got the tools that maybe some of the other agencies don't have. During this last snowstorm, our public works were helping get one of our fire trucks, I'm sorry, our fire chief isn't here, out of Maple Ridge, Highland. Their fire truck got stuck, and no one else could be up there to help them. They were relaying communications through City Hall, i.e. the clerk's office, because we realized that although we had radio comms, people didn't know which channels to be on. Lesson learned. But something as simple as a snowstorm, which we eventually recovered from, it wasn't as big of a deal. But our public works were out there. They had barricades, they had the standing truck, they had the de-icer. So the fact that our public works are already working together is something that's going to be a vital resource to us in the future. So again, some of our responsibilities and duties. We don't necessarily need to go through all of this, but keep in mind that this list is not exhaustive, and the three people sitting in front of you also manage other functions. So as we move forward with emergency management being a priority, we also need to determine how much of a priority it is and if we have the resources that we're going to start dedicating to a program and what that will look like. Some of the pictures of some of our public works gatherings. So it's not all work, sometimes it's social. Those social networks are vital to us, especially in an emergency. You do not want to meet the people that you're going to be working with and relying on the first time in the midst of an emergency. People's behaviors are very different when a crisis is happening. Some people panic, some people freeze, some people flee. It just depends on what your personality is and how much you train for whatever is happening. And sometimes even the calmest people have panic. Something bad happens, they don't know what to do, they panic. So the fact that we already have these relationships built from at least the city level, our public works, our field operations, we just heard from our law enforcement, we have fire services, we all talk. And so it's a matter of now what does that talking look like?
which brings us to, I think, the crescendo of the evening, at least according to my mayor. So, tabletop exercise. While I feel that this is quite important, I want to emphasize the tabletop exercise is going to be the first time for all three cities to be collaborating. What we do not want to see is that it becomes an epic failure and everyone walks away not having learned anything. So a lot of people like to use the word tabletop exercise, but there's nothing behind it. So we have a suggestion, and we're open to any input if the council would like to give it. But we would really like to test something at a very basic level, i.e. communication. We struggled with communications during the snowstorm. We think that's a really important place to start. If you can't talk to your partners, if you can't talk to your responders, it doesn't really matter what each of you are doing because you're all going to be essentially doing the same thing or nothing. So what we recommend is working from our individual EOCs, and this would include our special purpose districts who are very interested in participating, and determining what our interoperability and our communications look like. We have 800 megahertz systems, we have cell phones, we have computers, we also have UHF radios for the city. What does that look like? Is there a way that we can, if all communications are out, carrier pigeons are not an option any longer, although we suggested it, and people laugh, but if you remember, if you go back to your history, it actually, people did use it. It was used in many strategic battles. So everyone laughs, but it's
World War One. That's all one. World War One.
So yes, absolutely. World War One. Thank you.
That's all one.
So having been out in individual scenes, we've also used communications such as a trap line, which many of you, if you're familiar with wildland fires, if you pick a central location that your communities go to and they know they can get to safely, and you post messages there. You post them there every 4 hours at a specific time. Everyone knows that they can go there and look for that. But we have other technology that we can use. But are we able to use it at the same time, in the same way, and do we all have the same understanding? So, we would like to know if that's something that you are interested in. We know that a tabletop exercise, some sort of drill, is important to all of you. However, again, we want to make sure we start with the basics.
Are you interested? You want to show a hand?
Oh, gosh, sure.
Yeah.
I would love to answer one.
And I have a comment, of course. Is somebody who's read the 9/11 report detailed, the number one thing that went down was communication. And that was, and you guys know this more than I do, is there was like 14 different organizations involved in the 9/11 issue. So I'm excited to hear this. And I'm excited to hear your outcome whenever you do this. So next year's Tri-City meeting, we'll probably want a follow-up for the city managers to follow up how it went. If not before, maybe briefing at least our council levels and where we go from this. So whenever you do it, I'm excited about this.
Well, your briefing may come before that.
Okay.
Because our invitation is going to be, not that any of you council members have anything else that you would be doing, but when we choose this day, we would like you there as observers. So you won't be active participants, and don't let that hurt your feelings. Hear me out. In an event, you will not be in the emergency operations center.
Probably not.
You will be somewhere with your administrators making policy. That is where you are safest. That is where you can get the most information. You will be separated out. So we would like for you to see what is actually going to be happening so that there's no mystery during an event of what's happening, what is our staff doing, what does that look like. You'll see firsthand. So we will try and coordinate with all 22 of your schedules, but we will do it far enough in advance and we will make it as convenient as possible. And even if you can only stay for a few minutes, we would like to invite you to go to either your individual EOC or maybe come to another city's EOC and observe how they're doing it. This last part of this is it's going to take staff resources. So if this is truly a priority for the council, what we're asking for is some patience. Some of your staff members that are doing various jobs may need to spend a little bit of extra time to get ready for this so that we can have strategic meetings to figure out what does this actually look like and come up with a true communications plan so that on the day of the drill, we actually have something tangible that we can take away and that we've learned.
Councilmember Edelman.
I just have one comment because as I was reading through your collaboration page,
the Maple Valley CERT. Black Diamond had one too. You know, we're Mountain View Fire and Rescue, and Councilmember Pepper and I and the mayor just recently went through the whole program. Councilmember Deedy's already been through it. I highly recommend that to everybody. And if you're on the city council for your cities and you have not been through a CERT training, you need to do it. Because the people that go for the CERT training are the first responders before the first responders can get there. So I think we as elected officials need to keep that in mind.
Can I see a raise of hands of the council members who has some ICS training? Incident Command System?
Would that be like the FEMA course?
Yeah.
Is that like the
NIM?
No.
Yeah. NIM?
Well,
ICS? NIM? Okay.
Oh,
yeah, the FEMA.
Yeah. Okay.
They're all online.
Oh, okay.
I did a full red cross.
Okay. I was just curious because I know that there's a few people on my council that don't have it, but yeah.
Well, you know, can I suggest something? When you do this, you know, when you do this exercise, is maybe sometime this year, throw a training up for elected officials, what we're going to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, like a one-hour class on a Saturday or 2 hours class. I know it's going to be hard to get all 22 of us there, but some of us might come for a couple hours on a Saturday.
I've all seen the trainings online.
I know, but it'd be more fun to do it together.
I've already talked to King County, too, and they're willing to offer an evening or a Saturday, whatever works best for all three cities to have an elected official training.
Wow.
A couple hours, just a brief.
Otherwise, we're going to show up and get in your way. So you make the decision. The training, we go away.
No, that's why we're separated. Don't interfere with them.
Have you not heard that from Sonic three times now? You're not.
It's a great idea. They do actually have some trainings that they're putting on. They've done a combo class for just for staff of ICS, IS 100 and 700, which are the basic classes, so that you start to understand what all these acronyms mean, what the structure looks like, why you have you know, section chiefs and what that actually will look like in practice. Because frankly, all of us in this room, we all know that our staff resources are quite limited. So in an event, we're not going to be able to follow truly that the ICS model. We just don't have the staff. We're going to end up relying on outside resources. But again, there's a reason why we tell people that self-sustainability for at least 3 days is imperative. We may not be able to get to you, and we as the government can only do so much. When you look at communities like Joplin, most of the government resources came in and they didn't need them because the community was already starting to rebuild and recover on their own. It's not going to happen nationwide, but you're starting to see that a lot more is that communities are coming together through CERT, through Map My Neighborhood, through these some of these localized programs where it's a ground up. I mean, boots on the ground, ground up is the whole premise of the emergency management system because we know top down doesn't always work.
Thank you very much. And Les, you're going to have to cut yours really short. Sorry about that. But we have all your material, so we know where you're going, okay?
Well, let me just note that, number one, I'm looking forward to sharing with each of your councils in the coming months in a individual you know, encounter with you to present. I think we've already talked, spoke with the clerk from Black Diamond about presenting at a study session in the near future. Love to do a meeting with Covington as soon as possible as well. First of all, just a little bit about myself. My background's insurance industry for the last 28 years. Husband and father of six children, resident of Maple Valley since 1997, and actually before that we first moved into the region in 1989. But currently I serve as the South Regional Insurance Manager for AAA Washington, and I've spent 2 years on the Planning Commission and then just am in my first term on City Council in Maple Valley. One of the issues that I'm passionate about and that I ran on is accelerating transportation improvements because these issues are so,
so critical to our citizens. Tonight, I just want to tell you that there's a message of hope about transportation. And we are not destined to spend countless hours in daily commutes on substandard state highways. We have the power to make a change, to take into our own hands this situation, and to go after the improvements that are needed in our regional transportation network. It's not easy. And yes, this is a pioneering effort as a regional transportation benefit district. Now, as I engaged leaders, one of the things I did find was some enthusiastic support and desire to help. Lorena Ng, Department of Transportation, Reagan Dunn with King County Council, legislators, but all had a similar frustration in that funding mechanisms and a regional entity to drive this size of project does not currently exist. So, as I like to say, transportation is king in the county. And as we look at transportation, we've got to recognize really what it does for and to our communities. Transportation has played a dominant role in Puget Sound and King County since its inception. It's always defined the physical dimensions and the potential economic development capacity of a region, not just its commutes. So we need to consider the fact that transportation is also not only affecting us on our daily drives back and forth, but in the national and the world competition for finding economic development. How do employers view us when they see our congested roads and lack of ingress and egress to our cities? So, when we look at these commutes, and maybe we won't, maybe we will. Nope. So, very simple diagram. AN commutes basically are just showing us what we all know, that we're all commuting into our employment centers that surround Seattle and the east side. PM commutes, exact opposite of this. Now,
Les, you need to move it up. We have all your materials. Most of the people on my council have already met with you. We're going to have a work study with you. You can get a work study with the rest of the people on the council, but I know how long your presentation is, so you need to hit the highlights and move on so we can get this meeting over, because I'm sorry you got placed at the end, but we need to get the meeting over with.
Well, the question is, what if we could reduce even a small portion of this? What would that look like? And that's what we need to be concerned about. So when we look at the Growth Management Act, it tried to address this several years ago. The result, though, is the jobs, housing, imbalance that we currently endure. Southeast King County is one of the worst in terms of that imbalance. The unintended consequences are huge. The obvious solutions we've all tried to address in our comprehensive plans, mid-range cost, capacity roads projects and the smart corridors, zoning attractive tracts of buildable land. These are aspirational until we can deal with the roadblock that exists in transportation. We're underserved. We know that. We know that we're not even on the map when it comes to a lot of these issues. The state transportation package did not address this for us. So, it is about time. About time that we take matters into our own hands and address the issues with a regional transportation benefit district consisting of the stakeholders I'll be getting to right there. Enumclaw, Covington, Black Diamond, Maple Valley, and unincorporated King County. This area all has common issues that need to be addressed in regional transportation. This is what the stakeholders in a proposed district would look like and the beneficiaries. Now, this is just a mock-up of what this could look like. The general idea, though, is simply this. A regional transportation district that has three advantages: trust, efficiency, and the capabilities to address these mid-range projects. It allows Southeast King County to band together and pool our license tab revenue, to leverage that with the state, and then start these projects earlier, rather than 2035, 2040 at the earliest, if we are relying upon state resources only.
So, thank you very much for that. I'll think really quick so we can move on. Is one thing is he's asked for, and this is also what Executive Dal Constantine asked for, is a resolution. So Maple Valley has already done a resolution. You have a copy of your packets tonight. And he's willing to come talk to your council, hopefully sometime soon, so you can get a resolution and move this forward. It's a great conversation. When you get it on your agendas, I'd allocate probably 45 minutes to an hour, so you might want to do a study session. And it's a really good presentation. He's willing to come. City manager from Maple Valley, any of our council members are willing to meet with you on this issue. And state legislators are watching this statewide, because we would be one of the first if we did it. So, but it's a partnership there. So please get them on your agenda hopefully soon. Yes, ma'am.
Is
this
to build roads and wide roads, or like SB3
public transportation? No, it's for the roads. It's 169, 410.
So he will meet with you soon individually. So, but
okay.
Please get him on your agenda sometime soon.
Yep. We already have him on our agenda. So. Thank you very much. If there isn't anything else, we'll just adjourn the meeting. Thank you for coming.
Hey, so you are.